So how's your holiday shopping going? Mine's going great for me. I started 5 different times to buy stuff for other people, and every time I bought stuff for myself. I bought Timberland boots, needed them. My feet were cold and wet. 10-watt bulb, and a set of 3 cutting boards, and I don't even cook. So basically, I need help, but I'm getting a lot of good stuff. But if you're looking for great stuff at a really cheap price, go to deepdiscount.com. They're my sponsor. They've been great for my show. Please support them. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the Deep Discount logo, and you're going to see all sorts of deals. It's everything from movies to TV shows to swag to T-shirts, books, you name it. They got it, and everything's on a big, big, big discount right now. These are last-minute gift sales. HBO series. They've got a 60% discount on a lot of the great HBO series. I got Ballers. I got a season of Ballers, and I got the first season of The Deuce. Great, great shows. So go. You can't miss a great deal. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the Deep Discount logo. It'll take you there, and you'll get all sorts of great deals. And, of course, they got new releases, as you know, every week. This week, Venom. How good of an actor is Tom Hardy, huh? Not as good as me, but, you know, he's getting there. He plays an investigative journalist, becomes bonded to a symbiotic alien life form, who hasn't, while trying to expose unscrupulous scientists Carlton Drake's experiments on human test subjects. A really cool movie. They tried to take the whole alien genre thing into another direction, and I think they really succeeded. It's really cool. So check it out. That's at a great price. That's our new release. Deepdiscount.com. Don't spend time, you know, looking for TV shows that you want to watch in the middle of the night or movies you want to watch. You can just go buy yourself something, buy your friends something, buy your family something, especially the family, because, you know, they can be annoying. Deepdiscount.com. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the Deep Discount logo, and it will take you there, and you'll get some great deals. Also, my one-man show, Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak, running through January. At the Actors Temple Theater in New York City. If you're going to be in the New York area, especially for holiday season, come by. We get shows every week. Go to telecharge.com for dates and times, and use the code PMFAN. That's PMFAN. You get 50% off. Hey, guys, thanks a lot for checking out the podcast. Enjoy this week's guest. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. A returning guest, a friend of mine, somebody I worked for at one point. He has a really great show on CBS called The Neighborhood. He stars in it and is executive producer of it. Cedric the Entertainer. What's up, brother?
Paul, what's up, brother?
How you doing? I miss you. I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know, man. You know, we had our fun run, and then I ran into you in New York not too long ago. And so,
yeah,
everything's been good. Been out here on the West Coast, man, just doing it.
Yeah, I'm really happy
avoiding the fires.
it's just are you sitting in like flame retardant suits with a hose in your hand?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sitting in the middle of the pool always. Like, I take a kiddie pool with me.
You just hire firemen as your private fire people, and they just hang out in your house all day. That's pretty
good.
Oh man, that's crazy. Well, here you just got ice cold and weather here in New York, so you know, it's the other side of it. Hey, your show is really great for
Thank
a lot
you.
Of reasons. I guess I really want to get into it. It's really funny, but it's a really strong point of view show, and that's really cool, especially on a mainstream network like that. And watching it and then sort of reading up on it, you know, I know it's based on the creator Jim Reynolds moving into a predominantly black neighborhood in Pasadena. But you said something interesting when he showed you the script. You said you'd do something with it. But you said, quote, "If I can tell you my side of it, then we got a story." That was your quote. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, I think the idea of what he was trying to tell was trying to tell the story of the perspective of gentrification from, you know, the white guy moving back in. And it made all of the minority characters, the black characters, stereotypes, because he thought he understood them. He thought that everything that, you know, was his point of view of, like, you know, people just not wanting him there was what the neighborhood felt. And I was like, no. I said, so when you write it like that, you kind of miss the point. And therefore, it feels like everything that you believe is true, again, falls into a stereotype of those people. And so I was like, I have to be able to say it from how the black guy sees it so that you can understand it's not really about color. It's all about perspectives and people coming in and following, you know, kind of norms and rules that are already been put in place, respecting those things and not taking this kind of assumption that, what we would say a little bit of the privilege of, I kind of know how you feel already, therefore I'm going to project it on you and let your feelings be what is what I'm feeling and let that be real, and it's not the truth.
Yeah, you know, you said it's really interesting you say you don't see color. I got booked at one point in an all-black club because, you know, black people love me, Cedric. And I was like the first night, and I performed for, you know, mixed race audiences or whatever, but this is, you know, pretty much everybody African-American. And I was a little like, oh, should I say this? Should I do this joke? And then I said, stop. They're the same people you are. I grew up blue collar. They're blue collar. They're white collar. They have wives. They have kids. They have job issues.
Yeah.
They're just a different color. And when I said that to myself, all the anxiety went away and I went out and I just did what I normally do and totally connected with them. And it's funny how simple it is, but it's also interesting how people can miss looking at it that way, you know?
Yeah. And especially, you know, we try to put that in the fact in the show that is also that generational thing, because you do have, you know, one definitely, you know, say, you know, our age group and even more so our parents, where those kind of separations were, you know, they were like just kind of put into the atmosphere where the idea that somebody was different from you was you put all of those stereotypes or monolithic attitudes and you put them into, you know, the whole group. And so I think that, you know, you start to see, like, again, as generations got more and more, you know, people started to live together, work together, kind of cross over younger.
Mm.
You started to see that, you know, that's not necessarily a truth either. And so I think, like, to your point, like, once you kind of inside an environment, that's the biggest, one of the biggest things we try to show in the show is once you kind of know someone as an individual, you take them out of the group. You know them as an individual. So, you know, this is how people get to go, well, not Michael Jordan, you know, not Oprah.
Yeah.
Because in their mind, they know them. So they take them out of being just black. Because, oh, no, that's Michael Jordan. You know, he different.
Yeah.
You know? Well, it's because you think you know him. So, you know, but if you put everybody in a group where you just kind of put them in these monolithic groups, then that's where you kind of let your stereotype ring true.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we're having fun with that. Like, okay, we have this issue, but now, you know, each episode I get to know Dave a little more. He gets to know me a little more. And that was one of the big things we had early on with the show is that my character was really offensive to middle-aged white guys. Like, they just did not like the fact that I didn't like him. They thought that it was like, notes, you know, we were getting notes about me being reverse racist and that doesn't sit well with the audience. And he's like, hey man, you gotta be able to bite the truth first and then you can learn from it. So it's definitely been able to grow.
What was that leads me to something I wanted to ask you. You had said that your character is there one of the reasons your character's reacting to these white people moving in, at least in the beginning part of the series, and maybe he's softening a little bit as it goes along. But you said something, it's about the fear that gentrification might be at the beginning of the process. Like, is he afraid?
Yeah.
Is he afraid of like a group of people coming in, white people, because he doesn't understand their culture or because he was treated poorly by white people growing up? Like what is it about your character that's having such a struggle with these people moving in?
It's the idea that, you know, it's kind of be like, I would say this about people who who discovered that Waze is sending folks down their street, right? It's like you know, you wake up in the morning and you get out, you know, normally you live on the off street and you can get up and you can just go out and get in your car and the traffic is a block over.
Right.
But now Waze is sending people down your street.
Right.
And that is somehow disturbing. Like when it was going down the other street, it was fine. But when it's coming down your street.
Yeah. It's like not in my neighborhood, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And so the idea is that you start to change the complexity of things that are normal to you. Mm. So the normalcy of even in dysfunction, people rather have that dysfunction as their normalcy as opposed to something new that kind of changes everything.
Right.
So you go, and that's what my character, I try to deal with that for the first part of it, is as we were trying to develop the show, I wanted to be very clear that my character wasn't so much that he was white. It's just that, like, once this starts, then it all starts. And next thing you know, none of the kind of cool cultural things that we do will be acceptable. It won't be around. It'll change what is normal for me.
Yeah.
And that's what I fear most.
Well, that's what I really love about it, because I grew up in an all Italian neighborhood in Rhode Island. And I do think, to your point earlier about generational, like my kid, and I think your kids probably too, they don't see color. You know, growing up, yeah. I kind of saw color because my uncles and grandfather, they yeah. really saw color, right? And so I think in a good way, it kind of got watered down to my where, and you even see it on TV. There's a lot of interracial couples and commercials now and stuff like that, which is
right.
great. But I understand what you mean. Like they started busing black kids into our neighborhood, and I personally didn't care. I was just a kid, whatever. Like, but I can remember adults like being in the neighborhood saying, "Oh, we don't want that." And I never understood it, and I still wouldn't understand it, because I think exactly what you're saying, and you hit it on the head from an African American perspective. You don't want change. You like things the way they are, and you feel like. And that's what there was with our neighborhood. I think it was like, well, we got a bunch of Italians here and it's good and we don't need anybody else. And that,
yeah,
you know, and that's
yeah,
really
and,
scary.
You know, and it is, it's limiting and it's weird because, again, in those scenarios, when you go to work or you find someone that's like, again, a different race, a different culture, mm-hmm. a different, even sexual preference, right? This is the new world where you go like, all right. You know, it used to be this thing, this dude's gay, I'm not messing with him at all. And then you finally find someone, he's just funny. This dude, like,
yeah
he's gay, but he cracks me the fuck up. Like, yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care, right? I just don't care. Like,
right.
And then so people would try to have you have an opinion about that. And you'd be like, I don't really care. Like, I don't, it's not a part of my life. It doesn't bother me that that's what he does. And so therefore, I can accept, you know, this person who they are. And you know, in life, hopefully, you know, you want to be, you know, you realize that we don't necessarily have the true ability to live on island with just our people. And so,
yeah.
you know, you need to be more tolerant. And if you find out that you're more tolerant, then you have more exposure to cooler things. I mean, you know, who doesn't like a good, you know, I mean, imagine us not being able to have pizza. Because we didn't like Italian people. I mean, come on.
Jesus. Right, exactly. And me not being able to have some nice collard greens and ribs because
yeah,
I didn't like
exactly.
black people.
Yeah, exactly. Like, come on.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, I couldn't use Jerry Curl anymore. It would be terrible.
Yeah, yeah. All of our houses wouldn't have any decorative walls if we didn't know gay people. We would live in the world
exactly
where no one saw some shit as like, all right,
yeah.
you know what?
Well, you know, it's funny. My wife,
a little leopard pillow right there.
Exactly.
I could use a little color.
A little
on
color.
My couch.
A little pink
a little
flamingo
flash.
On the lawn isn't a bad
yeah.
thing if
you
you're
know
a white
what?
Person.
That's not a bad thing. That actually adds some character.
You know, it's funny because I had that experience
grew up in a very Italian family, and my wife is a WASP, White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. So, you know, kind of more proper and quiet. So first time I took her to the house, we did the big Sunday family dinner. I think Blacks or Italians are very similar, by the way. Like a lot of big families, a lot of loud talk and a lot of emotion, you know, a lot of love, but food's important. So, you know, we got the big dinner going, 12, 14 people, pasta, this and that, and everybody's talking, nice time. I'm driving home and she goes to me, "Why was everybody mad at each other?" And I go, "What?
Right.
Like, why were they yelling at each other?" I go, "We weren't yelling. That's just how we talk." She goes, "It is? Because it seemed like everybody was yelling." And it was good for her to see like a different culture. You know what I mean? Like that was literally 2 miles from her house too. Like it wasn't like I took it to another country or something. But that's what I really think is great about the show is you flipped it in a really smart way. How did you get the network to start getting comfortable? Because when the first couple of episodes I saw, I'm like, man, his character's like, he's going for it. Like, this guy doesn't like white people and want him around. Like, how did you get them comfortable? Because they were giving you notes, you said.
Yeah, it was one where the network was very passionate about the show. And I think that once they kind of heard my point of view, they really believed. And they've shown that, you know, in this unique way that they believed that they had the star and they believed that they had the, you know, the personality that was going to be able to be sensitive to all things and at the same time have a point of view. And so it took more of a, you know, a thing of for Jim Reynolds and I to find our bond because, again, this was something he was passionate about. He had wrote it. Mm. He was, you know, it was in his head as such. And so, but in order to get this show, you know, picked up and put on the air, you needed both characters.
Yeah.
And then the network would realize that for their point of view, they was like, we needed to be from Cedric's point of view. So that's how I became the executive on the show. And then, you know, it just took some time for Jim and I to find our jail and be like, all right, cool. And so the more he understood me, the more I understood him, we were able to find this, and you know, and then we were able to cast the great characters, really great actors to play these other roles. And I think that is, you know, one of the things that really helped us settle in. And, you know, and again, each week, you find yourself growing. You find yourself still having a hardcore debates over certain shows and you know, and
but that's
walk away
good.
Moments.
But that's what makes good TV, you know. That's,
yeah,
that's
like true good Italian family stuff, exactly. Like you said. Like, and that's so funny too that you brought that up, because that is so true that, you know, from that kind of, you know, WASP Anglo Protestant point of view, even when we're passionate, I'm not mad. I'm only saying what I'm trying to say. I'm not actually mad.
Right.
And so I would have to explain that to Jim. He's like, "Well, you were upset." I said, "I wasn't upset. Well, you were yelling. I said I wasn't yelling."
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of like, you don't know what you're talking about. You're an idiot.
Yeah,
like
right.
That.
Exactly. Like, man, that's dumb, dog. That's dumb. That don't even make no sense, dog. You know, but you called me dumb. No, not
literally.
No, let's not, you know, man, no, it's the shorthand.
Exactly.
It's like a, yeah, so.
What did you have to do with Jim? Jim had mentioned in an interview that I read that, you know, going into it, there were things that you guys disagreed on in terms of how to proceed. Obviously, you worked it out and you work well together, but like, What were some of the bigger things where you guys were just not on the same page initially?
I think some of the key things was really trying to get Jim to understand that the points of view that he had the black character speaking from would not resonate to the mass of our audience. Like, he thought he was being, you know, like respectful and, you know, respectful to the culture. But, you know, like, he would have my son talking back to me, you know, in a way that was, I said, "Jim, that don't work for black people." Mm. Like, we don't, you know, he can be grown, he can have an opinion, but what he can't do is do it with disrespect and me not recognize that and move on. Mm. So if he has to say something hard, or if you agree that you know, you need this as a point of view for a story, then you have to let me as a father address it back. Then we can move on. But you don't just don't get to say, "Mom, shut up," to black moms. Like, that's not not a real thing.
Same thing with Italian moms. They're going to come at you.
Right. The mass of our audience would go, "What the fuck? That's not real." And you would lose your audience. And he was like, "Well, you know, he's upset at his mom, and he's just trying to tell us." Well, bro, again, I know that may seem real to you, but that's not real. And if you lose them with the fake stuff, we won't ever be able to get the audience back. We got to land everything in these kind of truths. And so that's a large part of constantly our struggle is, you know, trying to make sure, you know, that we always fighting to, you know, to find that balance where, you know, we could tell a story that has controversy. We can tell a story that has a truth to it. And again, and not all black families are the same. I know some black kids that have cut their mama out, but you know, That's not the cultural norm. Mm-hmm. And so therefore the masses won't be able to follow it because it won't feel real to them.
Yeah. Well, you know, you said something, it says, having real moments earns you equity later with the audience. Like, what does that mean? In other words, they'll buy into, the comedy more strongly.
I think those first episodes, the episode where my character seems so dead set on not liking these white people that they're there, that I'm so kind of hard. Mm-hmm. If you believe that, then you can believe later on when I do find something that I kind of like about them. When I do relent on something, you believe the drama because you now believe that at the core, you know, Sid's character is this way. But if you like it and you like this about the other character, you go, "Sid, you're going to have to like that." But if I don't, then you go, "Oh, God."
Right.
You know, and then if I give in a little bit, just a little bit, you go, "Okay, all right, this guy's not a bad guy. Yeah. He's going to be okay."
Yeah.
And that's the thing you have to earn and to keep an audience engaged is that.
And also it's real. And also it's real, like, because people aren't one dimensional. They're not just nasty all the time. They have a myriad of feelings and stuff. And so, I mean, the whole thing's relatable and in a big way. Real quick, I just want to ask you, too. You decided to do a multicam versus a single camera. And I know you said, you know, and I agree, like single cameras tend to be at times a little more snarky and dark, and multicam is a little bit more, you know, sort of user friendly, if you will. Did you do multicam because you're dealing with some serious issues at times that can be tense, and multicam helps you soften it a little bit in delivering some of those messages?
You know, I think that when we kind of approached this from the multicam point of view, it was one where we thought, you know, we kind of thought in the old Norman Lear shows that, you know, of course, this was going to be something that, you know, kind of to the point you said, we can talk about serious things, and yet we know we got these formulas to get in and get out, right? You have to kind of do, you know, your act breaks, you got to do it, and it's not as heavy where people won't be able to let go of issues. Like when you see it in a single cam, you know that some of these things you couldn't solve in 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, but in multicam, you kind of know we're going to get to an end in this show to, like, okay, all right, there was a resolve.
Right.
And so we wanted that. We wanted to be able to not be preachy, be funny, and at the same time have something to say.
Yeah.
And so that balance each week is always, you know, always what our notes are about. Like, what are we saying in this episode? Where's the funny? And then how can we say something and not necessarily tell you how to feel. Like, we don't want to preach.
Yeah, I'm doing a one-man show right now in New York in Broadway, and that was my director and I. We have a no kumbaya rule, which is like, we don't want to force anything. I think you force stuff down people's throats, you disrespect their intelligence. I think audiences are smart enough to arrive at their own. Look, there might be a really racist guy out there that watches every episode and, you know, thinks you're a jerk and hates you. And then there might be a guy that's sort of a little bit racist and you turn him. Everybody's going to feel a different thing based on what you're doing in your art. So I think that's great. Like, I feel like you guys are like pretty much hitting all the right notes. I think it's really, really strong. Yeah, man. One last thing before we jump. You lived, when you first moved to LA, I know you started in Missouri and all doing stand up, and then you moved to, you know, do more acting and whatever. You lived in a Latino community and you didn't immediately feel comfortable from what I read. Are you tapping into that experience a little bit when you play this character?
Yeah. You know, you have to try to use the things that are most important to you. And like I said, I came in with a lot like, you know, what I would say the white character on our show is, because I was, you know, on the upward trajectory as a, you know, an actor, because I came in from St. Louis and I was a little corporate. I came in with the hubris that I was somebody that, you know, when I show up in your neighborhood, I'm the person.
Your property, you know, value. I mean? Your property value just went up because Cedric came into your neighborhood.
Because I'm here. You know, I'm the guy with the cool car downstairs. You know, and you know, I'm bringing all the hotness.
Yeah.
And you know, you start to go, you take away from the fact that people have been living here for years, and they got things that they do. And if you find yourself being disrespectful to that, then you learn very quickly, like, oh, that's why you always block my space. And I can't, you know, because I'm fucking being a jerk and don't know it. You know, like, I'm being disrespectful to, like, you know, that your mom has to go up these steps with groceries. And I'm just like, yo, I don't give a fuck. You know, this is why I park my car sideways, you know.
You got to acknowledge that there are other people in your universe
They got a thing, and then you find ways to get along, and next thing you know, you find friendships, and next thing you know, y'all at each other's barbecues, and then it's like, yo, man, that's my guy. Like, you know, it turns around once you're able to let, you know, people in.
It's a little bit like the journey that Clint Eastwood's character in Gran Torino takes. I don't know if you saw the movie, but like, he really hates the Asians, and then he really gets to know them and like they become his family. It's really great. And I think you're a perfect guy to play this character because this character can have an edge to him. You're so likable as a person, as a performer. I think you put a different person in with like a really hard edge as a performer, it would maybe be too strong a character for people to take. I think that there's a really perfect match. Really happy for you, man. It's a great show. The Neighborhood on CBS. I hope you guys are running for years. You're doing good stuff, and I like your tackling issues and stuff. It's really ballsy. It's good.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, man.
There you go. Go to my one-man show. If you're in the New York area, Paul Mercurio's permission to speak. Telecharge.com for tickets, and also leave some nice comments on iTunes. It always helps. Hope you guys have a great week, and we will see you and talk to you in 1 week.